You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Gopher Podcast. I am Ustreet. With me this week to commiserate about the loss to Michigan is Blake, Iowa Gopher.
Pleasure to be here as always.
And Andy, Gopher Guy 05.
Is it really a pleasure though? I mean, it's nice, but pleasure? That might be pushing it.
It's good to see that Andy is in a happy, optimistic mood. I believe the reason we're all in a happy, optimistic mood is because Saturday sucked. And it sucked for two reasons. One, major loss, not great. But two, the defensive performance was shatteringly bad. I have heard some people, including one of these people on this podcast, wrongly attribute as bad as the Rob Smith debacle against Illinois. And while that is impossible to ever come through, the defense did not look good against Michigan. Blake, what were your thoughts on this problem?
Where to begin? It was bad. I'll say that. I think we can all agree on that. It was just collectively a horrible night for everyone on defense. I don't know that anyone came out of it feeling well, especially on defense. I mean, even when you have Benjamin St. Juice and Coney Durr at corner, they did okay, but they both had their moments too where they struggled. And it was just, for me, an extremely discouraging performance. I mean, they only forced one punt all game, three missed field goals, and then in garbage time stopped him on fourth down with the second string in. But I certainly was expecting struggles, knowing that this is a defense replacing seven starters from a year ago, and a lot of positions there's some youth and inexperience. But I certainly wasn't expecting them to just completely get annihilated. Michigan just imposed its will on the defense for most of the game and just did whatever they wanted. And obviously Michigan fans are having a blast this week thinking that they look like world beaters. And, you know, sincerely, I hope they are that good. And that's part of the problem too, is after week one, it's just hard to know is Michigan that good? Is Minnesota that bad? It's just really tough to make a lot of judgments after week one. I think some clarity will come this week, maybe next week, if the games happen. But I have some deep concerns about the defense moving forward, just because I feel like a lot of the problems against Michigan were just young players making mental mistakes, some older players making mental mistakes, and I don't know how much they can grow up in an 8-game season. So I do have faith in Joe Ross yet. I don't think he's the second coming of Rob Smith by any means, but I just have some questions about how much he can control the season, how much he can fix in the short term. But extremely, extremely discouraging defensive performance on Saturday.
Andy, Blake is being the full Eeyore on the podcast. Do you take any optimism from the defensive performance in any facet whatsoever, or do you share an identical view?
Well, I have optimism, hopefully, that I think that the defense might snap out of it a little bit sooner. Obviously, Blake is worried this might be a season-long problem. But it was ugly on Saturday, there's no doubt. The corners were the highlight, and that's not saying much. The safeties were atrocious, the linebackers were atrocious, the D-line was atrocious, except for one Boye Mafe sack, and then he disappeared. So I'm gonna go with the hopes that Minnesota, at least traditionally under P.J. Fleck, has been a horribly slow starting team, especially on the defensive end. If you remember, the Gophers went 3-0 in the non-conference season, but even the defense looked pretty pliable against South Dakota State and Georgia Southern and Fresno State last year. So, obviously, Michigan is a much better team than any of those three, and it was a really tough task right away. You know, I think we'll get a little bit better read on the season-long struggles of the defense the next couple of weeks as they play what should be much weaker opponents in Maryland and Illinois. You know, if the defense is still struggling against both those schools, then yeah, it could be a bit of a long year. But if Joe Rossi and PJ Fleck can right the ship and they can fix some problems and look considerably better against Maryland and Illinois, getting ready to go into the heart of the schedule against Purdue and Iowa and Wisconsin, I'll feel a little bit better. So I'm still holding out my judgment. You know, I'm hoping that we'll see a much better performance this weekend, but they definitely got a lot to fix this week, both in film study and in practice, that's for sure.
Definitely. It's almost certainly the case, just for those who were watching at home, that the defense also had to deal with the after effects and implications of COVID, both within the kicker's room. So there's a very good chance, though PJ Fleck never releases officially anything related to injuries, but there's a very good chance that the starting punter, as well as the backup punter, as well as the starting kickoff specialist, all in some way were either diagnosed with COVID or part of tracing and were not available for the game. This is part of the reason why the defense began the vast majority of its possessions on short fields. And I think that does have something, while I am not a huge believer in momentum, and I agree with my colleagues, there is something to be said for the fact that the defense was having to deal with a lot of short fields very quickly, and so Michigan was able to score or use a offensive playbook they might not have been able to use in the same way if they had much worse field position. But that is neither here nor there, because it was also the case that the defense couldn't stop anyone and the offense at critical times was unable to score. So Blake, one of the things that I took from the game on Saturday that was both optimistic in some sense for the rest of the schedule but distinctly pessimistic for trying to beat Michigan, is that the offense gave away points. In particular, they gave away 10 points, not being able to get into the end zone. Those 10 points probably changed the tenor of the game, if not necessarily the outcome. So from what you saw on Saturday, which incidentally was Mark Sanford, the new offensive coordinator's first game behind the helm calling the plays, how should we feel about the offense going into week two?
You know, I think you can feel pretty good. I mean, from the start, they were minus two starters in the offensive line, which we kind of knew coming in. Right tackle Daniel Falele's has all but confirmed that he's opted out of the season, and Curtis Dunlap, the right guard, who for a 24-hour period seemed to be transferring this offseason, he was seen on the sideline with a hard cast on his foot, and the rumors are an ACL, so it sounds like for the foreseeable future, those two are going to be gone. And so we saw the offensive line shuffle a little bit, and naturally they didn't look great at times, but I also think that they did look pretty good, you know, especially in run blocking. They paved the way for Muhammad Ibrahim to have 140 yards, I believe, on the ground, which I thought he looked great, and that's exactly what I expected from him. Pass protection was a bit of a different story, as, you know, Tanner got blown up on the ball that just landed into a defensive lineman's hands, and he strolled into the end zone, and it's tough, too, to kind of assess the offense, and especially, you know, Mike Sanford and Matt Simon, because how much of that game plan were they able to stick to when Michigan scored every drive and there's pressure on that offense to keep pace and catch up with them, and at a certain point, Michigan knew what was coming, and they could just pin their ears back and try and take down Tanner Morgan in the backfield, which they did on one occasion, back-to-back-to-back, for three sacks. So, I mean, it's really tough to make a fair assessment of how the offense did. But, I mean, 24 points against a Don Brown defense is pretty damn good, especially for a season opener with a new play caller, you know, offensive line kind of missing. And if there was a disappointment, it was, I think, that the wide receiver core really struggled outside of Rashad Bateman. Literally only one wide receiver recorded a reception outside of Bateman, and that was Chris Altman-Bell, had one catch for, I think, about 45 yards. Otherwise, it was a pretty quiet night for Rashad Bateman's supporting cast. But I was happy to see the tight ends get involved in the passing game. And it only took, you know, two plays into the game before Kokeef was hauling in his first career touchdown. And I don't know that anyone thought Kokeef would be the one who'd be the beneficiary of the tight ends being involved in the passing game. But as a fan of this tight end group, I'm all for it. So I think it's fair to be optimistic about the offense. It was a tough game for them in terms of the circumstances, but I thought they performed well considering.
What about you, Andy?
Yeah, you know, all in all, you can't really fault the offense for Saturday's performance. But I do think it's going to be adapting to that offensive line, you know. Not having your two big anchors on the right side and shifting people. And, you know, I'm sure that Brian Callahan and that group have been working mostly with that combination of players for the most part of practice, but they still looked like they hadn't had much time together. They were a little out of sync at times, and so I think, you know, as Blake was saying, run blocking was much better than pass protecting. Pass protecting, you know, and a lot of this had to do with Don Brown and his blitz packages and things like that, but there were several times where Tanner Morgan either A, didn't have a chance to get rid of the ball, or B, wasn't very accurate because he was getting rid of things really, really quickly because he didn't have much time on Saturday. So I think that going forward will be key, especially for the improved play of the wide receiver core. Obviously, we know every single team is going to be keying on Rashad Bateman all year. You know, I think Chris Osmond Bell made that one nice comeback catch on the one throw by Morgan, but I think, you know, we didn't really see much out of him out of the slot where he did a lot of things last season. You know, that third wide receiver spot, whether it be Daniel Jackson, who got most of the snaps, you know, Seth Green might be able to see some time. It'll be interesting to see what the Gophers can do to dial up something a little bit different there. It was nice to get the tight ends into the action. Personally, I still wonder why we're throwing the ball to Kokeef so much. I mean, Kokeef is a great player, don't get me wrong, but, you know, for 3 years we had thought of nothing of him as basically a glorified blocking tight end fullback, and all of a sudden he's our downfield passing threat, which was a little surprising. But I suppose you take whatever the defense is going to give you as well. But, yeah, I'm hoping that the offensive line can gel a little bit more and give Tanner Morgan some more time, and hopefully with more time and confidence in the pocket, he can better find some of his, you know, big play receivers downfield on Saturday or on Friday against Maryland.
A wrinkle that I enjoyed, though it wasn't done as much as perhaps we'll expect to see for the rest of the season, was getting the running backs out into space to make plays in the passing game. Trayson Potts in particular had a couple of nice little routes. Tanner Morgan was looking at a different receiver and therefore missed Potts leaking out on a wheel route that would have been a walk into the end zone. Those kinds of wrinkles weren't really there last year under Shiraka, so it'll be interesting to see how those develop with the passing game going forward. Speaking of going forward, we'll transition into the brave new world of Friday night games, with this week coming up against Maryland. I know absolutely nothing about Maryland, though the blog staff were talking about this ahead of the podcast on which mascots do we think that we might be able to take in a fight, and none of us picked the turtle on the grounds that it had a hard shell, the ability to snap, and the ability to pop back in. So, Blake, do you think that Minnesota's defense will have a chance of besting Maryland's offense?
You know, it's kind of it's interesting, you ask. Obviously, from what we've seen in Minnesota's defense, they look like Swiss cheese against Michigan. But Maryland's offense last weekend against Northwestern didn't look so hot either. I think they lost 43-3, so I managed to muster all 3 points. And they're in year two of the Mike Locksley era. As you remember, if you recall, he was hired after DJ Durkin was fired, which feels like forever ago. And Locksley seems to be the guy that they think has solved the problem culturally, but so far the results on the field haven't really matched his enthusiasm. And, you know, on offense, they want to run a spread offense. They want to spread you out and kind of run and just, you know, win the numbers matchups in the box and kind of run on you. But they lost a lot last season in the backfield. Their top three rushers, I think, are gone. Actually, their top two rushers, Javon Leak and I believe it was the other rack. Anthony McFarland are both gone. Their third leading rusher from last season, Tanfleet Davis, did not participate last week due to, I think, a DUI he had the year before. So their starting running back is Jake Funk, who's, I believe he's a senior. He's not really the kind of workhorse back. He's more of a change of pace guy, but now they have to kind of lean on him to be the guy at running back. And Northwestern's game plan against them really was to just stack the box, stop the run, and force their quarterback, Talia Tungavaloa, to beat them to his brother. And that game plan worked. You know, on the ground, they only mustered, I think, about 64 rushing yards, and at a certain point just gave up trying to run the ball and really leaned on Talia. to help them in the passing game, and he, in his first career start, was just not great. You know, he's a guy that was, his decision-making accuracy just wasn't there at times. He was focused on trying to hit home run plays and ended up throwing, I think, 3 interceptions, 2 in a double coverage, and just 1 on an overthrow downfield. So their offense, that first game, just not clicking very well, eye on the ground or in the pass game. They do have a pretty good receiver, Dante Dimas, who's a potential NFL draft pick at some point, but he really didn't see much action on Saturday just because Talia really struggled. I believe Talia actually went, what was his stat line? 14 of 25 for 94 yards and 3 interceptions, so just a really tough first start for him. I think he mentioned after the game that he had some first game jitters, and it was definitely apparent. I mean, he's pretty good in and out of the pocket. You know, he's got some good legs. He's got some good poise, but he's just a guy that I think he's young, inexperienced, and he's going to make, if you force him into it, he's going to make a lot of mistakes, and that's what happened against Northwestern. So, as far as how, they'll fare against Minnesota, considering the Minnesota's defensive form at week one, we'll see.
Very optimistic thoughts from Blake. We also might be thinking a little bit about Maryland's defense versus Minnesota's offense, and we'll bring Andy here in a second to counteract Blake's overt negativity about this. But from what you've seen, Blake, in your preview for Maryland's defense, how should we expect Minnesota and Minnesota's offense on Friday, and what do you think their chances are of moving the ball and scoring a lot of points?
I mean, if you watched Minnesota on Saturday, watched their defense, you pretty much watched Maryland's defense as well. They had a lot of similar struggles. They've got a couple really good linebackers in Chase Campbell and Ayinde L.A., and those two were their top two tacklers against Northwestern, but really they really struggled in the run fits. I think Northwestern racked up something to the tune of 325 rushing yards against Maryland on Saturday, and just – they really could not wrap up, and just gashed them for a lot of big gains. Their defensive line got some decent pressure, but just against the run game, they just couldn't get tackles, couldn't plug gaps. They were out of position, weren't following assignments, things like that. So it looked very similar to what Minnesota did against Michigan. And in the secondary, they played a lot of zone coverage, and Peyton Ramsey, who's former quarterback in Indiana, transferred as a grad transfer to Northwestern this year, just picked him apart. I mean, they've lost a lot in the secondary too from a season ago, and they've got a lot of youth back there. And defensively, just really not great. And I think I don't know how much this will impact the matchup with Minnesota, but I know Northwestern really kind of kept them on their heels, going no huddle at times, and Maryland really struggled to kind of match personnel with them at times. So defensively, not great. They didn't even register a sack against Northwestern. They kind of let Ramsey escape the pocket quite a bit and extend plays. So really tough first game for the Maryland defense. Obviously, they allowed 4 to 3 points. So, but also, similar to Minnesota, they were putting a lot of short fields because of the turnovers. Obviously, Talia Tagovailoa had 3 interceptions. I think they had at least 2 fumbles that they gave up. So really tough matchup for them. And, as far as Minnesota's offense, I think if Minnesota can put up 24 points against Michigan's defense, I would imagine they'd be fairly successful against Maryland, especially with the way Mohamed Ibrahim was running and the way the offensive line was run blocking. I could see them having similar success as Northwestern on the ground.
Andy, Blake has been super negative, and that may filter into his prediction at the end of this podcast. For you, do you see optimism as Minnesota goes into Maryland?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously first week was ugly for both teams, but I do have more confidence in the Gophers being able to figure out what went wrong in week one heading into week two than I do Maryland. I'm sure that's a little bit of Homer optimism, but I do think that, it's fairly obvious that the Minnesota offense is much better than the Maryland offense, and the Michigan defense is much better than the Maryland defense. So, as Blake said, we put up 24 points, granted, a good chunk of that, we got a little bit of short field help too with the block punt and things like that, but the Gophers did have a few sustained drives with Mohamed Ibrahim on the ground, and Tanner Morgan was able to find Bateman for chunks there, and the tight end for chunks there. So I do believe that the Gopher offense should be able to move the ball pretty easily on Friday night. Obviously with Northwestern racking up 325 yards, you'd hope for a big game for Mohamed Ibrahim, and it'd be nice to see maybe a breakout performance from either Cam Wiley or Trey Potts too in that second hole. I think Potts you know, he's got more of the breakaway speed, I think, than Wiley does. So if he can get outside the tackle box, or if he can catch a screen and get a couple blocks downfield, I think he could really take advantage of a couple big plays. But that's going to be the other thing. If Maryland does get lulled into playing that soft zone like they did against Northwestern, as long as Tanner Morgan gets protection, he should be able to pick that apart. You know, obviously, you know, zone, you're just asking for Bateman to be able to find the holes in the defense and get open and Chris Hotman Bell. So I do think that that will bode well for the Gopher offense against the Maryland defense. On the other side, it's going to be, again, you know, working on those run fits for the Gophers. Obviously, a pass rush would be great too, for putting pressure on a young quarterback making his second start. If Minnesota can get some pressure on him and force him to make more turnovers, that'd be good. But a lot of it's going to be initially stopping the run and making sure those linebackers, whether it's Cody Lingenberg back there again, or whether we see if James Gordon might be back, or Donald Willis might see some more time. It sounds like they didn't see a ton of time week one, just due to the fact that they'd only practiced a few days. They may have spent a good chunk of fall camp not able to practice due to probably COVID issues and things like that. So, you know, hopefully they, with another week, they might be able to get a little more time if Lindenberg is struggling. Mariano Sorry-Marin hopefully can and step up a little bit. He didn't have the best game as sort of the veteran on that linebacking core. And then the safeties, obviously, between Jordan Howden and whether it's Tyler Newbin or whoever may step into that second role, have got to be able to play a little bit better too. So, you know, I do think it's going to be a work in progress, and Maryland's probably going to put up more than the 3 points they did against Northwestern. But if this game becomes a shootout, I still have pretty good confidence in the Gophers being able to outscore Maryland.
I have no specific view as to whether or not this should be a shootout, though I will say that from a base talent perspective, the assumption should be that Minnesota is more talented than Maryland. Now, whether or not that means that Minnesota on Friday will actually beat Maryland is a separate question. My two position groups to watch is in fact not going to involve just the offense and defense. This week, the position group of most interest to me is the special teams, in particular if whether or not the starting punter, starting kicker, and backup kicker are able to play or not. I think that if they are, that will drastically change Minnesota's approach to this game. It means that we won't have ridiculous sky kicks, we won't have weird squib kicks, and we have a punter who can kick the ball more than 20 yards in the air. All of those would be distinct positives, and that would also change the inflection of the game. I think it would also provide PJ a little bit more, say, relaxation than he would have otherwise. If they are not able to go, I think we might actually want to expect that Minnesota will be going for it on fourth down an awful lot, which, if you don't have a partisan rooting interest in this game, should be super fun to watch. So that's the position number one. Position number two, as Blake alluded to, and terms of having to figure things out, I want to see the front four for Minnesota get sustained pressure on the quarterback and stuff up run holes by themselves to, in essence, provide the linebackers the ability in obvious passing situations to drop seven and in run situations to not consistently get caught in the wash. One of the things that has to be the case for Minnesota is that, especially on defense, their more senior players, their more experienced players need to step up and show leadership. And there's an awful lot of experience, not necessarily that we've seen it yet, but there is an awful lot of experience on that defensive line. And so while we might be able, in some sense, to accept mistakes from players making their first career starts, such as Cody Lindenberg or Tyler Newbin, we should not expect that to be true for players on the defensive line who have played quite a few snaps in the last couple of years. I think if they are able to do that, if they're able to pressure the quarterback, if Maryland is uncomfortable on offense, even if this is a shootout, I like Minnesota quite a bit. With that, let us turn to our general predictions. Andy, who you got?
Yeah, you know, like I said, I think the Gopher offense is going to have a fairly big advantage in this one. And even if the defense is still trying to figure things out, I do think that the offense is going to be able to to carry the load this week, unlike last week where, you know, Don Brown had things dialed up. I do think that Maryland's not going to be able to pose quite as big a challenge. So I'll take the Gophers 42-24. The offense stays hot. The defense might still struggle a little bit, but it won't be enough to matter.
How about you, Blake?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head with special teams. I mean, I don't think anyone would disagree that Saturday was pretty much a disaster on special teams. I mean, when you can't kick off and you can't punt, I mean, we saw really how valuable those two positions are for this team. And I'll be curious if those two still aren't available, what the game plan will be for Saturday, because obviously what they tried against Michigan is just not sustainable and not going to be conducive to a successful game. So that'll certainly be something to watch, especially in pregame warmups, to see if those two are out there for the first time this season. But offensively, I think Minnesota will put up a lot of points on this defense. I'm looking for them to really get going on the ground. And hopefully C. Tanner Morgan just get a little bit more comfortable and maybe go through his progressions a little bit more. And hopefully we get to see some of those younger guys like Trey Potts and, you know, Chris Hoffman Bell and Daniel Jackson get some more action in the past game in on the ground. So just really want to see those playmakers get their hands dirty and get the ball. Defensively for Minnesota, I honestly don't have a lot of confidence in this defense. And, you know, we've been burned by Maryland before. I think it's just 2 years ago and the year before that. Maryland's athletes just burned those Rob Smith defenses that couldn't stop the run, couldn't maintain their run fits or plug gaps. And I think they don't quite have the athletes they used to, but I think that's going to be a problem right now if they play better than they did against Northwestern. And with that said, I'm going to be a grump about it. I'm going to go Maryland 35-32.
So let us very much hope that Blake is wrong when y'all wake up on Saturday morning. I believe that Minnesota should beat Maryland, so my prediction is that they will do so. I will not give a point score, but I do think that from a nonpartisan perspective, this game could either be incredibly fun to watch, i.e. offensive shootout, or incredibly boring to watch, i.e. one side very quickly taking it to the other side. My fervent hope is that that is Minnesota to Maryland and not in the reverse. But thank you very much for listening to this podcast this week. Make sure to check out the Daily Gopher for not only previews, but all other articles that we'll have in the run-up to the Maryland game, as well as various game threads. And with that, go Gophers, row the boat, and make sure to vote.
Go Gophers, row the boat.